Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone, live from the Green Space in its 10th anniversary marathon. And now we continue with our April series, Reefer Managed. All this week, we've been looking at cannabis legalization as a social and criminal justice issue, as New York and New Jersey's governors are both still aiming for recreational legalization in the next few months. We will keep covering all things weed every weekday through next Friday, April 19th. And then remember our three-hour national call-in next Saturday, April 20th, called Ask a Legal State. I'll be co-hosting with Anne Marie Awad from the legal state of Colorado, and we'll see what we can learn from the experience of the 10 states plus Washington, D.C. that have already legalized. That'll be next Saturday, 4:20 from noon to 3 on WNYC and public radio stations across the country. Today, right now, we're going to have a debate. What's the best path forward? Decriminalizing marijuana or completely legalizing it? Sometimes the words are used interchangeably, right? But they mean different things. 14 states have moved toward decriminalizing marijuana but not legalizing it. So possession of small amounts of pot no longer carries criminal penalties like prison time, but possession of larger amounts or trafficking, including sales for recreational purposes, remain criminally illegal. And of course, decriminalization laws vary from state to state. Marijuana, as I said, has been fully legalized in 10 states plus DC, and we're in a tricky moment in the United States where it seems like the marijuana train has left the station. But in terms of public health harm reduction, who gets the profits from legal marijuana sales, and restorative criminal justice, we're all still running to catch that train, or so many Americans and American states are. So let's have a debate. Our participants are Dr. Kevin Sabet, founder of the anti-legalization group SAM, or Smart Approaches to Marijuana. He's on the decriminalized side. And Maria McFarland Sanchez Moreno, executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. She will be debating for full legalization. Welcome back, Maria, and welcome, Dr. Sabet. Hi.
Thank you so much. Hello.
Thank you.
And let's start with opening remarks. Maria, we're at a crossroads here in New York and New Jersey. What do you see as the right approach in terms of dealing with cannabis and the law?
Well, thanks so much. I'm first delighted to be here. We have been running a campaign to legalize marijuana in New York. New York has decriminalized marijuana, has had decriminalization for decades now, since the 1970s. It hasn't worked. In the last 20 years, 800,000 plus New Yorkers have been arrested for marijuana possession, even with decriminalization in place. And that's because police have found ways around decriminalization. And our view is that the best way forward is to remove criminal penalties for marijuana entirely, and instead establish a responsibly regulated market with a strong focus on protecting health and public safety, ensuring that you can label products, that you can control what their content is, their potency, so that consumers know what they're getting. You can have strong restrictions on advertising and protect minors. And you can also reduce the size of the illegal market so that you can tax the revenue from marijuana sales and reinvest that in the most impacted communities, which is what the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act that is now being debated would do. The idea is you regulate, you expunge or clear the records of people who have past convictions for marijuana offenses, you reinvest in the communities that have been most harmed by prohibition, which are overwhelmingly Black and brown communities in New York, and you find ways to create market access for those communities. You have small licenses, you have other ways into the market that restrict the ability of big industry to control it.
All right. Kevin Sabet, I think you have a, you know, a definitional challenge, as I said in the intro, to even explain the difference between decriminalization and legalization. So why don't you start there and then make your case?
Sure, and there is a big difference, which isn't. So I appreciate the nuance. And it's just a pleasure to be here down the street from where I live, and a happy 10th to the green space. So it's a real honor for me and also to be with Maria. Even though we might disagree, my old boss, President Obama, told me we can disagree without being disagreeable. And I think that that's something we should try and listen to these days. You know, I think that there's a big difference, first of all. Decriminalization is, you know, essentially removing criminal or civil or other penalties, including, you know, cause for arrest, obviously incarceration, for, let's say, personal possession amounts of marijuana. In Vermont, which is often called legalization, that's actually more of a decriminalization because they don't have legal stores in Vermont. They've, you know, they don't even have McDonald's, I don't think. So they said, if we don't have McDonald's, we don't want to have a pot shop selling 99% gummy bears, which I think makes sense. But you're allowed to grow a small amount, and that's kind of in the middle of the two. Legalization is really the commercialization of marijuana. That's the difference. And legalization allows selling. And so the critical difference is on with one end, you're allowed to possess it. Maybe you grow your own. Maybe you get it from a friend. In fact, most people get their marijuana from a friend or family member for free. It's not like some massive drug deal going on. Or legalization is to sell it. And the reason I think we should essentially remove criminal penalties, but not legalize is because we already have legal drugs. They're called alcohol, tobacco, and OxyContin and the other opioids. They're led by multi-trillion dollar business interests who lie through their teeth with tobacco for 100 years about the harms of smoking. We knew smoking caused cancer in the 1920s. The government didn't acknowledge it until the 60s. The tobacco industry didn't pay for it till the early 2000s. Now big tobacco with vaping is making more money than they ever have. So don't feel too bad for them, even though we've reduced smoking because of the vaping issue and also the issue of marijuana, which they're fully invested in. I do not think we need the commercialization of 99% THC gummy bears, edibles. This isn't your old joint from Woodstock. I really could care less if an adult smokes a joint and falls asleep on a Friday night. What I don't want is Philip Morris Altria, which is what they're doing. They've invested $4 billion in Canada, investing in the pot business. And I think we have to learn from our history. You know, tobacco was a relatively benign drug before big tobacco came on board. We didn't have lung cancer deaths before 1880.
So
they made it a more harmful drug. That's what the pot industry is doing today.
So you think that if there's a legal pot industry, it's going to make marijuana itself more harmful to people's health?
Absolutely.
As a substance, substance will get worse?
No doubt about it. Pablo Escobar did a lot of horrible things. One thing he didn't do is invent the pot gummy bear. One thing he didn't do is buy off all the special interest lobbyists in these states that are working it. And the reason New York and New Jersey have slowed down isn't just because of, like, you know, some random event. When you have the PTA, when you have every major medical association in this country saying, do not do this, and when you have the Black Caucus very split, because it is not uniform in the African-American community that this is going to be a wonderful thing, because when they look at alcohol, they see the social injustice of that. They see the liquor stores that are 8 times more likely in a poor community, you know, poor Black community. They don't want to see that for marijuana.
Let me clarify to some listeners who may not get the reference. When he talks about pot gummy bears, it's a kind of edible. In the legal states, they sell, you know, gummies that are THC infused, and there's a concern that that's going to be attractive to children, just like, you know, with I guess the flavored tobacco products and Juul and stuff like that. So what about those particular concerns, Maria?
So the MRTA, the New York bill, actually bans the sale of edibles that are that have come in shapes that are attractive to kids. So you wouldn't have pot gummy bears in New York. That's a red herring. The other issue is that the illegal market already reaches people across New York. 12% of New Yorkers use marijuana. That hasn't gone down. That number has fluctuated over time. And right now, those New Yorkers have no way of knowing what's in the products that they're buying. There's no labeling. If somebody cooks pot brownies, you don't know what the potency of those pot brownies is. There's no tamper-resistant packaging for children. You know, all of the benefits that come from regulating a market and adjusting as you see threats to public health are not there when you have an illegal market. I also want to hit one other point, which is around this issue of decriminalization. We at DPA ran for many years a bill in New York to decriminalize or to fix some of the problems in New York's decriminalization, try to close some loopholes. That would have, you know, been inadequate compared to marijuana legalization, but it was a way to reduce the harm, and it was what was politically feasible. Right now, we are running campaigns in places like Savannah, Georgia, or Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or New Orleans. I don't see Sam coming out and supporting those campaigns. I didn't see you celebrating when we decriminalized in New Mexico a couple of months ago. So I have to question whether this is really about you supporting decriminalization or just that you don't like legalization.
Well, here's the issue. First of all, there's a fallacy that we have regulation in states that have legalized marijuana. There have been hundreds of thousands of individual recalls of marijuana products that are totally mislabeled when they're tested. This isn't, remember, we kind of forget that little tiny thing called federal law. And federal law, it means it's all of this is illegal, any state that's doing it. The FDA is not looking at it at all. And we don't know what's in it. And the black market, the underground market, is thriving in legal states. The idea that drug dealers, when you legalize it in a state, say, oh, you know what, we're going to go pursue dental school now. We're done with our drug dealing. No, they sell to the people the legal market won't sell to. They sell to the kids under 21. You still have a thriving black market with some of the largest segment of users because there's an age limit. You also have these guys that are undercutting, the drug dealers, undercutting the legal price because it's taxed, because people think, well, we're going to make some money off of it, which I'm still waiting for the alcohol, tobacco, and other revenue to fix our schools. I don't think we're number one in the country yet. I don't think teachers are overpaid personally because of all the wonderful alcohol revenue. So that's a false thing that we're going to get money and pay for all these wonderful things. It never happens. But the issue is, on when I see someone like John Boehner, this is really important. You know, I worked for President Obama for 2.5 years trying to get criminal justice reform in, and it was blocked at every level in the House when John Boehner was Speaker because he was afraid of the Tea Party.
Now he's a marijuana industry lobbyist.
Thank you. Making six
Did
figures
you know
a,
that, folks,
a speech,
about John Boehner,
you know, and you had to delouse his office because of how much he smoked because he was on all the boards of the tobacco industry, and so now he's getting them into the pot industry. So the issue is, I don't want people arrested. Let me be very clear: I do not want kids going to prison for pot. I don't want them to get a criminal record. I don't want them to be arrested. I don't want to stigmatize. But at the same time, let's not forget, this is also a problem for some users, not everybody.
All right.
But today's pot is different. We have a health issue to deal with. And I just worry about legitimizing it and throwing it to corporate America, who, last time I checked, put profit over public health in everything that they did.
We have to take a short break. We'll continue in a minute with this decriminalization versus legalization debate. And Maria, when we come back, you can respond to that point on the notion of, you know, if there's big pharma and there's big alcohol and there's big tobacco now, there's going to be big marijuana trying to push their product on as many people as possible and the potential harms from that. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, live in the green space today. Coming up, when we're done with this decriminalization versus legalization debate, we will have the actor Laurie Metcalf, who's playing Hillary Clinton on Broadway right now, and Hillary and Clinton, and the writer of that play, Lucas Nath. So that's coming up. But we continue with Kevin Sabet, founder of the anti-legalization group Smart Approaches to Marijuana, arguing for decriminalization instead, and Maria McFarland Sanchez Moreno, executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, arguing for full legalization. Green Space audience, if you have a question for either of them or both of them, you can raise your hand and we'll come around with a microphone. Callers, we might get to one or two of you at 212-433-WNYC-433-9692. I'm just curious. I mean, this is a random audience of people who just wanted to come down here and see us do the Brian Lehrer Show. I imagine since we're in Lower Manhattan, a lot of politically liberal people here. On either side of the question that we're discussing right now, how many of you would say you're for decriminalization as opposed to full legalization? Very few. And full legalization? Okay. And a lot of people still figuring it out for yourselves? Raise your hand. Yeah, interesting. So quite a bit, probably the largest of the three groups was those who haven't made up their mind. Very interesting. So Maria, on the point that Kevin was raising just before the news about big pot trying to push it on people more and more, like the alcohol industry or take your pick?
Yeah, so I think that there are two ways to deal with the industry problem, right? You can either try to regulate them very aggressively and create a system that limits the power of industry, and that's what we're trying to do with the MRTA in New York. So you don't have vertical integration in the bill in New York. That means that no industry can control all the different pieces of the trade, no single industry actor. We have micro-licenses to help low-income people enter the trade. You have incubator programs, again, to help smaller businesses, and you try to have a wider variety in the marijuana industry. The other approach is being discussed right now at the federal level is to try to have state control of the marijuana market, right? And that means you wouldn't have private actors. And that's not feasible right now at the state level, precisely because of federal prohibition. Because if a state like New York tried to control the marijuana market, that would pose a direct conflict with federal law. State employees would be violating federal law. So they can't do that. So the only way forward at the state level has been the private sector. And that's why we're saying you need really, really strong regulations to control that industry that's coming into being.
So you're saying, just like, and I think people in New York may not know this, but I believe that in some states there weren't liquor stores as we know them here. There were state what they call package stores, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what you're talking about. The state would actually be the distributor of legal marijuana products.
And that's what Uruguay, we drafted the marijuana legalization bill in Uruguay. We were very involved
in
that. And they have national control. Canada has legalized marijuana nationwide, and they have a mixture there depending on the different provinces. That's not possible in the U.S. because of federal prohibition. So if you really want to address this problem, fight for federal legalization and state control.
Let's take a question from here in the green space. Hi.
Hi, good morning. It's Anthony Zittrin. I would like you to talk about two things. One is the problem of driving while intoxicated with marijuana, and also the experience of Canada, which is relatively recent, and what lessons, if any, have we learned from Canada?
Maria, why don't you take the driving question, because that's obviously a challenge to legalizing advocates.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really that big of a difference, because right now, like I said, 12% of New Yorkers are using marijuana and driving under the influence in some cases, right? So you're going to have people driving under the influence of marijuana no matter what.
But there would presumably be more people using, or do you dispute that?
There may be more people using, and that is a possible outcome, and you need to have very strong public education around that. Unfortunately, with marijuana, we have a real problem because we don't have a reliable test to tell you when somebody is impaired due to marijuana use while driving, right? A blood test only tells you whether someone consumed marijuana in the last month. So you don't want to just go there because it's overbroad. You might try some of those field sobriety tests, but those haven't fully been validated for marijuana as opposed to alcohol. So that needs to be developed. That needs more work and research. But obviously what you want to measure is impairment, and you do need very strong public education.
And let me go right to another question here in the green space. Hi there.
Hi, my name, I am all for decriminalization because I object to the idea of big corporations making money off of legalization. But we already have so many problems with, as you mentioned, Philip Morris, companies like Monsanto, putting things into products that we ingest to make people more addicted. I don't see what guarantee, even the FDA has been shown to allow things that are later harmful to human beings. I don't see
solution. Your conclusion would be that the black market is actually safer for users.
Yeah, but I think even with the black market, there's no guarantee either way that addictive substances are not going to get into.
So if I can say something on that. So I think with legalization, you get the worst of both worlds. You get the black market, which, you know, if you're going to use it, whether you're going to really want to use it now or if it becomes legal, you're going to find a way to use it and do it. And you're actually going to go to the cheaper source, which in Colorado and many other states has allowed the black market to thrive. But on top of the black market and all the problems it has, you then have Madison Avenue. And you then have the state lobbyists, and you have that problem as well. Yeah. And the driving issue, let me just for a minute on the driving, because we can't forget this. The deadliest crash in New York State history, which was the limo driver that killed 19 other people, including himself. The NTSB released the report and found very high levels of THC. They tested him 6 hours later. It's true THC can stay in your system for a while, but it rapidly declines in the first few hours.
But under the criminal regime.
But the point is, this is a problem, and we're acting as if legalization doesn't affect people's ability or desire to use. If you get rid of speed limits, not everybody is going to drive 85 all the time, but many people will because you've gotten rid of it. In New York City, I live around the corner. I don't know about you all in the audience, but there is just because of this discussion, I feel, maybe I'm in the minority, that there is a markedly increased secondhand smoke exposure and marijuana everywhere I go.
We're almost at a huge issue. We're going to run out of time soon. And Kevin, I want to make sure to raise for you probably the biggest argument against the decriminalization path that I hear, which is that it's just still going to keep ensnaring black and brown people at absolutely unacceptable rates because we see it happening in the decriminalization states.
Well, I'm really glad you asked that because let me tell you something. We need major criminal justice reform. The idea that if we legalize marijuana, that somehow we're not anymore going to have racist criminal justice policies. There aren't going to be 11 more things someone will book a kid for if they want to.
But something as easy to attach it to.
Well, then let's decriminalize it. Then let's not have them go after that. And we don't have that in New York State, even though we have it on paper. We have not implemented it.
Maria, go ahead.
We did decriminalize in 1977. We've had it for decades. Commissioner Bratton, years ago, actually did order it be implemented, and you still had tens of thousands of arrests in New York City.
Arrests have gone up in Colorado,
800,000 arrests have declined dramatically in the states.
For youth, the annual average arrest rate for youth, and especially black and Hispanic youth, have gone up in Colorado because they're using it at school, which you're not allowed to do under legalization. They're using it in public. They're driving with it. Yes, overall numbers for adults. But we're still criminalizing young black youth in Colorado because we're focusing on this narrow issue. Criminal justice is a massive issue, and we're distracted by marijuana.
Give me your take on that, because if we have a dispute on the facts, it's important to get both sides out.
Look, overall numbers of arrests in the states that have legalized have declined dramatically. It did not happen in New York when it decriminalized. You still have, like I said, in 20 years, 800,000 plus arrests. Drug possession as a whole is the single most arrested offense in the United States. People are arrested for drug possession four times as often as for all violent crimes combined. Is that a good use of law enforcement resources?
Fix that. But don't give it over to Philip Morris. I mean, that's all I'm saying. Don't give it over to Big Pharma.
I'm not giving it over to Big Pharma or Philip Morris.
Maria,
how about
you don't
state
want
control? Yes.
A last word and then we're out of time.
What I'm saying is we need to take it out of the criminal justice system entirely, including for low-level sales, which are also a target of law enforcement, including for people on parole and probation who lose their release because they tested positive for marijuana. The only way to do that is legalization. And that is the only way also to establish a regulated market that can actually begin to address health concerns. And one final point. Right now, there are 72,000 plus Americans dying every year due to opioid-related or other overdoses. A lot of that has to do with adulteration of the supply, with the fact that fentanyl is in the supply of illegal drugs under prohibition. That has to do with the fact that the black market has no controls and everything gets poisoned.
The drug dealers aren't going away. We get Big Tobacco 2.0 with this. And why would we make the same...
We've seen a significant reduction in marijuana crossing the border from Mexico into states that have...
Because they're growing heroin now. I don't think that's a good trade-off.
Nothing like ending on a crescendo. So we thank Maria McFarland Sanchez Moreno, and Kevin Sabet for this decriminalization versus legalization debate. Our Reefer Managed series continues all next week. And coming up after a break, we have Laurie Metcalf and Lucas Nath on the play Hillary and Clinton. Stay tuned.